And we move on to next agenda item, discussing sale and lease backs. Am I handing over to Aisha?
Thank you, Sue, and good morning, everyone. So in May, the board gave us permission to begin the piloting process for an exposure draft of proposed amendments to the sale and leaseback requirements in IFRS 16. Agenda paper 12 discusses a sweep issue related to how a seller lessee initially measures the right of use assets and lease liability that arise in a sale and leaseback transaction, and as a result, how the seller lessee applies the subsequent measurement requirements in IFRS 16 to the liability. During the balloting process, we received some comments indicating that the board's tentative decisions about how a seller lessee applies paragraphs 36 to 38 of IFRS 16 to the lease liability might be difficult to understand and could result in inconsistent application. Paragraphs 10 to 16 of the paper explain those concerns. Paragraph 17 of the 17 to 29 of the paper then analyzed two alternative approaches that could address those concerns while still achieving the board's objective for the proposed amendments. For the reasons explained in those paragraphs, we recommend that the board specify the method that a seller lessee uses to determine the initial measurement of the right of use asset and lease liability that arises in the sale and leaseback transaction. Moving on to transition, the board has previously decided to provide the transition relief described in paragraph 31 for situations in which retrospective application of the proposed amendments to lease modifications and changes in the lease term would require the use of hindsight. And for the reasons described in paragraphs 32 to 34 of the paper, we are recommending that that transition relief is extended to the initial measurement of sale and leaseback transactions that include variable lease payments. Our recommendation would mean that a seller lessee that applies the transition relief will determine expected payments for the lease at the date it first applies the proposed amendments. While this is not explicitly discussed in the paper, we are recommending that the seller lessee would adjust to the right of use asset at that date with any remaining adjustments recognized in retained earnings. So with that, I'll now turn your attention to the question for the board on page 14 of the paper, which asks whether the board agrees with our staff recommendations as summarized in paragraph 35 of the paper.
Okay. Who wants to talk about sale and leasebacks? Jin Chao.
Thank you, Sue. I think it's very helpful and necessary to clarify and specify on how to determine the initial measurement for right of use assets and also the lease liability arising from a sale and leaseback transaction. So I agree with this direction, and also I agree with the staff's recommendation to take approach B rather than approach A. I think approach B is more, I think it's simpler and also less costly, less complicated comparing to approach A. If the approach A, we adopt approach A, it will end up we needed to, you know, calculate and impute the discount rate, and that discount rate determined by approach A actually principally conceptually will be inconsistent with the discount rate requirements we specified in the standards. So that will be a fundamental change to the our standards. So I agree with approach B. And then with regarding to the subsequent measurement of the lease liability, I have one comment. The proposed approach specified in paragraph 35B, it mentioned that the seller and the lessee, you know, should reduce the carrying amount of the lease liability in order to reflect the expected payments for the lease at market rate. I understand the intention of this wording. Actually, I tried to mention that only those expected payments for lease, which determined at the initial measurement date, would be allowed to be deducted from the carrying amount of the lease liability, rather than those actual payments for lease at the reporting period, rather than updated expected payments for lease at the reporting date. So I think this is the intention behind the wording. But when I read the wording, it sounds like people may have different understanding whether they need to reassess, you know, those expected payments for lease at market value, at market rate, at reporting date, or something like that. So I think it's better to clarify the wording, you know, to make sure that our attention, you know, articulated clearly. So this is, I think, just about the wording clarification. With regard to the transition relief, I agree with the staff's recommendation, because I think if we are going to require entity to retrospectively apply a proposed amendment, entities do need to use, I think most likely to need, where they will need to use of, you know, hindsight to calculate those numbers. So I think it's a good idea to provide transition relief for companies when they first apply the proposed amendment.
Thanks, Dr. Chow. Mary.
I support the staff recommendations and just wanted to make a couple of comments about things I think maybe should and should not be in the supporting document. Let me pick up first on a point that Jin Zhao was just raising, which is I did stumble a couple of times when there was the reference to market value in the document, and I think we just need to be we may need to have some kind of comment. I'm not asking for additional standard setting or guidance, but some kind of comment about what's the significance of the assumption that the terms are at market. I think it is something you were just emphasizing, one of the things that was in the fact pattern, but it could lead to a bit of confusion. And the second, something that I think should not be in the document, paragraph 15B cites as one of the reasons for coming back is becoming aware of the opportunity for structuring in terms of the board's original proposal. And I think that is something that normally we should be aware of and think about as we evaluate different answers. But I noticed that the concern that you raised here would be, and I'm reading the words, with a very different profile from those expected so as to achieve an outcome. And I think we should not give credence to an assertion that somebody would do accounting on a basis that was inconsistent with their actual expectations when the overall requirement is to reflect the actual expectations. So I disagree with the sentence at the end of that paragraph that we, you know, that implied that if we didn't address that point, that there would be freedom to make a structuring assumption for purpose of the initial recognition that was inconsistent with the reporting entity's actual expectations. So this, it's a bit of a soapbox comment, you know, standing on my soapbox comment, but I think while we do have to be concerned about valid structuring, I think that this example is not a valid structuring risk, and I think we should not raise it in, let's say, the basis for conclusion as a reason for doing this. But I am supportive overall of your proposal to change our approach and address the initial measurement.
Thank you, Mary. Nick.
Thank you. So I agree that approach B is a better way to facilitate what we're trying to achieve with this amendment. But clearly specifying the initial measurement of the right of use asset and the lease liability arising from a lease back theoretically extends the scope of this. And I just really wonder if staff are able to give a sense in terms of whether that's just in theory or in practice. You know, are there more wide-scale cost implementations here for preparers if you know, in terms of what's proposed in the amendment?
Sure. Maybe I'll come back on that, Nick. So you are right, and we've explained it in that way in the paper, that if you as a board were to agree with our recommendation, it does expand the scope of what the amendments cover, in the sense that before the sweep issue to date, you would have only been specifying requirements on subsequent measurement, whereas if you agree with our recommendation, this will now touch on a piece of initial measurement because it'll do that specifying how you work it out. So it does expand the scope in that way. In terms of the transactions that it will affect, we don't expect any difference in the transactions that it will affect. And the reason I say that is that the previous decisions you made were actually, we were drafting them to say they would apply to all sale and leaseback transactions. That's how they would be drafted. However, our expectation was that it would only actually cause a change or actually affect sale and leaseback transactions that would include variable lease payments. That continues in this case. So even though we're expanding the scope a bit into initial measurement, that would also, by the way, all apply to all sale and leaseback transactions. Our expectation would be that any change in accounting should only arise when you have a sale and leaseback that's got some variable payments. A couple of reasons for that. I think that what we're proposing in Approach B, to us, is kind of the most intuitive and natural way that people would calculate that initial measurement, especially when the lease payments are fixed. And in fact, in our illustrative examples that accompany IFRS 16, there is a sale and leaseback example in there, in example 24, and how we illustrated the existing requirements. We used the method in Approach B. We showed the initial measurement being calculated at the present value of the fixed lease payments. And also, we haven't seen any evidence, I suppose, to suggest. We've heard anecdotally people might work that out in a different way, but we haven't seen any evidence that people are actually doing initial measurement differently.
Thank you.
I also agree with the staff's recommendation. I think this is actually an important proposal to include in the document, because the situation which is set out, the example which is set out in the paper, which illustrates how you could get this sort of odd situation where you've got payments which are very much fixed in the most simple sense of the words, but where you end up with a portion of the payment being described as variable when the model gets applied, to me is just so counterintuitive and difficult to explain. I think it's a good proposal. And also, I think the other good thing about this, well, I do agree it is an increase in scope in the sense that it's addressing a point that wasn't addressed before. I think it's a relatively natural extension of the ideas that are in IFRS 16, which is a model which typically is based on taking lease payments, taking payments and discounting them and doing measurement that way. And it sort of builds quite naturally, which I quite like as well. I can't see anybody else who wants to speak. So does that mean that we are ready to vote on the question, which is on page 14? Could I get a show of hands?
Just one sec.
Serve Kelly.
Sue, Rika and Taru.
Yeah.
I can't see anything on my screen. Have you written in the chat box, guys?
Yes.
Yep. Not showing up.
Yeah, I don't see it either.
Oh.
I don't see it in the chat box. Simon. Sorry, okay. Rika?
Yeah, thank you, Sue. I agree with staff recommendation and just want to say something about the variable lease payment in practice. I think that statement in paragraph 27C seems sensible expectation of variable lease payment in practice, but still, at the same time, my first case came up with a question regarding sales and leaseback question of initial and subsequent measurement in practice was a transaction with a variable lease payment, and the second one again. So I just confirmed that the scope of the recommendation also covered both fixed and variable lease payment technically, and I actually think given the same reason in paragraph 27A, the lessee is a seller lessee. So it is more likely that the estimate of variable lease payment shouldn't be so difficult for them. And I also think that some variabilities are out of scope from the existing IFRS 16s, But that variability is included in the determination of variable consideration in IFRS 15. So I think in reality, the case, the Serra-Lessi faced difficulty in estimating the variable lease payment should be very limited. So I think the consequence seems the same, but I just want to confirm that point.
Yeah, yes, sorry, Rika, I think, were you asking whether the proposal would cover all sale and leaseback transactions, whether they include
yes.
fixed or variable? And yes, on paper and theory, that's what they would cover. The reason paragraph 27 just talks about variable payments, because, of course, the only time there might be any real sort of estimation involved is when there are variable payments, because if the payments are fixed and they're absolutely known, so there's no estimation involved in that case.
So that builds on our original decision, which was to cover all sale and leaseback transactions, yes?
Right, no. Yes.
Thank you. Sorry, so Tadao, did you want to come in as well? Sorry that my chat isn't working, so
we're
relying on the old-fashioned hands in the air method.
Okay, thank you very much. So, first, I agree with the staff's recommendation on approach B, and I think that's a good idea, including the specification of the method for determining the right of use, initial measurement of the right of use, and also the lease liability. Because in the end of the day, my general opinion that it's not going to make any difference, but it will give us what we want in terms of subsequent measurement of both. And that's why I support that one. One thing that I would just think that would be good to check is the effect analysis on whether this initial measurement in fact is just confirming what we already are expecting in practice.
Yes, noted. Thank you, Tata.
All right. Hopefully now everybody is okay. So everybody who wanted to speak has spoken? Yep. Okay, great. Can I get a show of hands on the question on page 14, please, whether you agree with the staff's recommendations?
That is 12, one absent.
Okay,
great. Sure.
Thank you.
May I ask for the floor, please?
Françoise, yes.
Yeah. Just a quick word. I mean, I voted in favor of the staff proposal because I believe it's a real improvement of what IFRS 16 says today. I think I should flag that overall. I'm voting against the amendment, so that you're going to see an alternative view, and that would be of mine on this issue. I think when it's always difficult to tackle an issue where, in fact, we are contemplating a standard that includes an implicit conflict between two principles. IFRS 16 says on one hand that variable lease payments, payments would not qualify as lease payments. And it's supported by strong arguments by a majority of board members there that were at the time board members. And on the other hand, you have this principle that when entering into a sale leaseback transaction, there shouldn't be any gain on the interest retained by the seller lessee. And it's always difficult, and we wanted it to be a narrow amendment, not to amend IFRS 16, and I supported all of that. But ultimately, I really couldn't support that we would come to conclusions without considering and having a full deliberation of how to remedy to that conflict. In fact, we have had a starting point and a gender decision that in itself negates the fact that the conflict exists. And then we start deliberation, contemplating subsequent measures only with, in a way, a response to that conflict being an input into our deliberation as if it was contained in IFS 16 itself. And so to me, we should re-deliberate this issue as a board from the start, which is considering the conflict. It is a knowledge in a number of our papers. There is a conflict. We need to tackle this conflict first. And if we conclude, as it is concluded, everything that we have done is valid. What we've done is valid anyway because it encompasses all sale and leaseback transactions. So the improvement won't be lost anyway. But I think we have to go that. And that's what you're going to read in my alternative view.
Okay, thank you for that, Francois. So that will be circulated with the ballot draft. Okay, so with that, given our operation instructions, I think we need to now take a 15-minute break because we're not going to, I think, necessarily complete rate reg within 30 minutes. So we'll take a 15-minute break now and we'll take a break and reconvene at 12 o'clock London time. Sorry for those of you who are remote, but we need to stop and then we'll start again at 12 o'clock London time.